Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, the first day of February, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And not only is it Hump Day, it's also FOMC Day, which means the Krka casinos, at least, are on a temporary hold, even though they think they know what the word from Mount Olympus is going to be. Yeah, 25 basis points or a 0.25% hike, but maybe they're getting close to the end. And speaking of getting close to the end, what was once called the United States is now preparing for yet another major escalation of the attempt to poke the bear and kick off a nuclear version of World War III in Ukraine. Reuters via Zero Hedge is reporting that the next arms package of about $2 billion or so will include rockets with a range of almost 100 miles, about double the range of munitions Ukraine has already been provided via the HIMARS rocket systems. Oh yeah, and this is a new part of the deal too. Might be almost $500 million for what's called the, get this, Presidential Drawdown Authority, allowing the Biden Fuhrer to send weapons directly to Ukraine from U.S. military stockpiles, already almost depleted. Until they're just plain gone. The drawdown package will likely include, says the piece, mine-resistant ambush protection vehicles, MRAPs, guided multiple launch rocket systems, and other ammunition that we might not need given that the southern invasion is going so well anyway, but when we do, it won't be there. One of the big stories today comes from the field of, well, I guess you can't call it this anymore, journalism, which your host now suggests should be called neo-journalism, because the new motto seems to be, objectivity has got to go. And along with it, as if you didn't already know, the truth. And I guess we'll work our way up to that one with a headline review from a couple of sources that are, in fact, more reliable than most of the waste stream, like this story from Brian Shilhavy via Health Impact News. More evidence, it says, that the FDA works for Pfizer. Who could have thought it? As the FDA has now asked Pfizer, oh so politely, to submit their cancer drug, and you know why those that have taken the poison poke are going to need more and more of that, don't you? For expanded approval, and oh yeah, with zero new actual trials. Hey, we don't pay any attention to the data anyway, especially if it indicates that the public shouldn't be stuck with this stuff. A lot of people in the big pharma industry were surprised about Pfizer's 2023 forecast in that there was a mysterious FDA approval not reported in the media at the end of 2022, but Pfizer received expanded use approval for their breast cancer drug, Ibrance, and reportedly, it's the FDA who approached them to expand use of the drug. Anybody want to ask why, as if we didn't know? No, it's really not funny, folks, but we do need to laugh because it beats the alternative. And yeah, it also explains why the acronym is accurately rendered as Federal Death Agency. Here's a story from Freightways via Zero Hedge under the headline, Cardboard Box Demand is also plunging at rates unseen since the Great Recession. Yep, demand and output of cardboard boxes and other packaging materials fell sharply in the fourth quarter, 2022, about 8.5%, according to data released by the American Forest and Paper Association and Fiber Box Association on Friday, the latest indicator that consumer demand is eroding, to put it mildly, following the plandemic. Because dwindling savings, inflation, rising interest rates, fears of a recession, which are almost certain to be justified, are all evidently swaying consumers to tighten their buckles, spend less, and batten down the hatches. Given what's coming, no doubt some of them would rather try to put food on the table.
Let's go, Brandon.
Let's go, Brandon. I agree.
And as you've probably figured out by now on that kind of related same subject, burning down food processing plants and killing lots and lots of chickens and turkeys is just not enough. From the Daily Mail, more than 50,000 pounds of deli meat this time is being recalled nationwide over booga, 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 potential listeria contamination after the USDA issued a recall of 8 products over the weekend, even though no adverse events have yet been linked to the allegedly contaminated meat. But customers are being told, throw them away anyway. And I'm going to read this next line from the story, folks, and try not to laugh until I get to the real punchline. Listeria, they tell us, is a bacterial infection often associated with dairy products, like ice cream and maybe deli meats. It can be deadly to pregnant women, newborns, and the elderly. And ain't that funny? Because so can the Zyklon B poison poke, not vaccine injection. Oh, and guess what they're not recalling or even telling you about? And finally, this headline from an unlikely source, I guess you could call it a bit of satanic truth. Jim Hoft and the Gateway Pundit say, this tells you all you need to know. the Satanic Temple has announced the launch of a new clinic to provide what they call religious abortions. And guess who they worship? In New Mexico. All of this is part of their continuing plan to fight for the right to religious abortion. Because, don't you know, and this has been obvious for a while, folks, but at least they're coming right out and saying it, the Satanists, and indeed all of the far left, believe abortion is a religious sacrament to their God. They're opening a religious services medical clinic providing free child sacrifice to women in that state. Which leads, I think, quite naturally here. This next story is one that's so important, well, actually so illustrative, that I almost started off with it today. But I also realized it needs a bit more of an in-depth treatment. It comes from constitutional law professor Jonathan Turley, and it's entitled, Objectivity Has Got to Go. He's quoting one of America's so-called top journalists, and I have to put the word sick after that because, you know, that isn't what we're talking about anymore, and that's really his point. News leaders, he continues, call for the end of objective journalism. Now, I've got to ask this question right up front. Is this good news or bad news? You'll kind of see what I mean as I go through it. Part of the reason I ask it that way, though, is because I don't believe we've actually had so-called objective journalism for years, probably not for decades, and yeah, let's be honest, maybe, never really ever. But at least we once had journalists who probably thought they were trying. And maybe the good news is, at least a few of them, scumbags that they no doubt are at least coming out and finally admitting it. Writes Professor Turley, we've previously discussed the movement in journalism schools to get rid of principles of objectivity in journalism. Advocacy journalism, instead, is the new touchstone in the media, even as polls show that trust in the media, and I would say rightfully, is plummeting. Now, former executive director for the WAPO, Leonard Downey Jr., and former CBS News, and I got to put that in quotes, don't I, President Andrew Hayward, have released the results of interviews conducted with over 75 media leaders, and they concluded that objectivity is now considered reactionary, even harmful. Emilio Garcia Ruiz, editor-in-chief at the San Francisco Chronicle, said it plainly, quote, objectivity has got to go. Or I'll say it again, maybe these lying scumbags just need to admit that what they have been practicing hasn't been journalism for years. Notably, continues Jonathan Turley, while Bob Woodward and others have finally admitted that the Russia collusion coverage lacked objectivity and resulted in, false reporting, media figures are now pushing even harder against objectivity as a core value in journalism. We've been writing, he says, about the rise of advocacy journalism and the rejection of objectivity in journalism, and especially in what were once called schools for it. Writers, editors, commentators, and academics have embraced rising calls for censorship and speech controls, including the marionette-in-chief, senile quid pro Joe Biden, and his key advisors, or maybe puppet strings is a better term. This movement includes academics rejecting even the very concept of objectivity in journalism in favor of open advocacy. And guess what they're advocating, folks? Communism and anything that is anti the creator of the universe and author of scripture. Even though Professor Turley won't quite go that far yet. And this is a good place for me to interject at least a bit of the commentary that I'm working up to. And that is, I've said this many times before on this show, your host doesn't make any claim to being objective. What I claim here is that I'm putting together a new show that is based explicitly and without question, and I've been open and honest about this since day one, on your host's worldview. Quite frankly, I'm not even sure if it's possible to be truly objective. But I will make this clear. There's a difference between trying to be objective and doing what Professor Turley is saying some of these folks are up to, and that's lying outright, because they've got an agenda to push down your throats, whether you like it or not. So, ultimately, I will contend there's a difference between objectivity and actually reporting the facts honestly. But having said that, it's also true, the way we look at the world is simply colored by the things we've learned, the things we've come to understand are true, and the things that we recognize are important. And the very act of picking out stories to put into a mere half-hour show is an example of exactly that. Which stories do I select? Which stories might be important, but I don't have time for, or you're likely to see them somewhere else anyway? And how do I order them and connect the dots? All of that has far more to do with worldview than it does with what might be called objectivity. But one thing is still true. It's either an attempt to get at the truth, or it's not. So we'll get back now to Professor Turley and let him continue to make his point. Columbia Journalism Dean and New Yorker writer Stephen Call, no relation, decried how the First Amendment and what was once called the right to freedom of speech It's now being weaponized in order to protect disinformation. In an interview with the Stanford Daily, Stanford journalism professor Ted Glasser insisted that journalism needed to, get this, free itself from this notion of objectivity in order to develop a sense of social justice. And he rejected any notion that journalism should be based on objectivity and said instead that he views, quote, journalists as activists because journalism at its best, and indeed history at its best, is all about morality, unquote. And guess what, folks? They're calling evil good and good evil, so this has nothing to do with the morality that was once called morality. Kind of like journalism, if you think about it. Thus, he said, journalists need to be overt and candid advocates for social, he left out the right word here, socialist justice, and it's hard to do that under the constraints of objectivity. Yeah, it's hard to do that, folks, under the constraints of truth and facts, and even the possession of half a brain. Because let's be honest here, what a lot of those folks are doing is not reporting, it's certainly not journalism, and most importantly, it's not even honest. Lauren Wolf, freelance editor for What Else? The New York Times, has not only gone public with tweets to defend the Biden Fuhrer, but recently published a piece entitled, I'm a Biased Journalist, und I'm okay with that. Well, I guess you have to give her credit. At least she's honest about the fact that she's willing to lie. There are others, including Nicole Hannah Jones, former writer for the New York Times, now a so-called professor at What Else? Harvard of Journalism. And you know her as the author of the 1619 Project. History twisting at its least objective has declared, quote, all journalism is activism. And, writes Professor Turley, she has a long record, too, as a journalist of intolerance and has touted controversial positions on rioting and even fostered conspiracy theories. And unlike the real ones, folks, these are the kind that turn out to be nothing but whoppers. And Yao continues, Turley, polls show that trust in the media is now at an all-time low. Less than 20% of citizens, the gullible ones, trust television or print media. And yet, he notes, reporters and academics continue to destroy the core principles that once sustained journalism and ultimately the concept of a free press and its role in our society. And notably, he adds, writers that have been repeatedly charged with false or misleading columns are generally the greatest advocates for dropping objectivity in journalism. But now they've gone to the next level. The leaders of media companies are joining this self-destructive movement, he says. And let's not kid ourselves, they're not speaking about columnists or cable hosts who routinely share opinions. They're speaking about active journalists. I have to put the word sick after that now, don't I? The people who are relied upon to report the news. Stating that objectivity has got to go is, of course, liberating in the truest sense of that word, your host notes. You can dispense with the necessities of neutrality or balance, or even, your host will interject here again, the concept of telling what is true as opposed to what you know to be a bald-faced lie. You can cater to your base, like columnists and opinion writers. Sharing the opposing view is now dismissed as both-sidism. Been there, done that. No need to give credence to opposing views, especially folks if they may be in accord with a God who's not permitted to be taught in the schools anymore or allowed in the public square. It's a familiar reality, says Professor Turley, to those of us in so-called higher education, which has been increasingly intolerant of any opposing or dissenting views, and I'll add it again, especially if those views have a scriptural or biblical worldview. And listen to this from the WAPO's scumbag Downey, who recounts how news leaders today, quote, believe that pursuing objectivity can lead to false balance or misleading both-sidism in covering stories about race, the treatment of women, LGBTQ, plus, 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 and we're not done with the pluses yet, rights, income inequality, climate change, and many other subjects. And in today's diversifying newsrooms, he continued, they feel it negates many of their own identities, life experiences, and cultural context, keeping them from pursuing, and I'm going to have to put the word sick after this, don't I, truth in their work. I guess along with replacing bitter for sweet and calling evil good, and this is one of the oldest concepts in the Bible, folks, they replace truth with lies. There was a time, says Professor Turley, when those who called themselves journalists shared a common identity as professionals who were able to separate their own bias and values from simply reporting the news. But now, objectivity has become virtually synonymous with prejudice. And by the way, prejudice, folks, ain't what it used to be either. Because just like real fascism has become anti-fascism, real racism is now called tolerance, and tolerance, of course, isn't. Outlets like NPR are erasing lines between journalists and advocates. NPR announced that reporters could participate in activities that advocate for, quote, freedom and dignity of human beings. Well, some of them anyway, in both real life and social media. Downey echoes such views, declaring, what we found has convinced us that truth-seeking news media, what a whopper right there, must move beyond whatever objectivity once meant to produce more trustworthy news. And Professor Turley shares your host's skepticism. Oh, really? Being less objective will somehow make the news more trustworthy? That didn't seem to have worked for years, but Downey and others are doubling down like bad gamblers at Vegas. Indeed, the whole Let's Go Brandon chant, he concludes, and I think this nails it, is as much a criticism of the media as it is the senile wannabe dictator infesting the White House. And here I part company with him on at least one aspect of his main point, and I'll draw a different conclusion. Says Professor Turley, if there ends up being little difference between the mainstream media and the so-called alternative media, the public will continue to trend away from the former. Huh? No, and here he misses the point. They're trending away from the waste stream because they know basically it's the fake stream. It's full of lies, and they're looking for truth. And if that means they find it in an alternative media source, great. If not, they'll look elsewhere, but hopefully they'll keep looking. He notes that the mainstream media has the most to lose from this new movement, and among individual editors it remains popular to yield to advocates within their ranks. That's what the New York Times recently did when it threw its own editors under the bus to satisfy the mob. And as media outlets struggle to survive, he concludes, its so-called leaders are feverishly sawing at the very tree branch upon which they sit. And on that score, folks, I agree. Where he doesn't go, but I will, is to suggest that Scripture not only has always told us what the truth is, it's told us what we need to do in order to find it. Seek it out. Seek and ye shall find. Study to show yourselves approved. Use the brain that the Creator of the universe gave you to discern the difference between the clean and the unclean, the lies and the truth, the holy or set apart and the literally profane. Yes, we can learn and should to rightly divide the truth from the lies. That doesn't mean that we don't still have to work at it, or that as we get closer and closer to ultimately what's coming, it's not going to be more and more difficult, and even ultimately that the lies might get so big that even the elect could be deceived. But here is one test that we cannot overlook. The Creator of the universe has given a choice. We always have a choice. He's laid it before us, and it's real simple. Choose life. And yeah, choose this day whom you will serve. What the waste stream is offering is literally not only a choice of lies, but of death, the antithesis of life. Look at the real issues that underlie social justice. Well, really, socialist justice, which turns out to be just for us, not you peons. The Bible says one law for you and the stranger that dwells among you. They say, oh no, just us. We get law, you get chaos and gulag. Whether it's the Zyklon B injection, don't kid yourself, they intend to stick it to you and your kids whether you like it or not. Self-destructive, utterly communist economics. The stifling of free speech and the ability of people to make choices for themselves or defend themselves from a tyrannical government. And for crying out loud, don't think about trying to petition the government for a redress of grievances. That'll put you right in that same gulag. While the neo-journalists cheer on your prison guards or raise their children not to be slaves of the almighty state. Or even to believe that science should be based on actual evidence, not opinion that ultimately turns out to be intended to result in mass genocide. Like non-existent man-made global warming, whatever they call it lately. But neo-journalists will push it anyway, because the neo-scientists will tell them to. No, I'll say it again. I don't believe there really is any such thing as truly objective journalism. Read the Bible. You'll see that even there is a viewpoint, even when it's that of a prophet, servant, or apostle. And many times, it's written from what authors for centuries have referred to as an omnipotent or godlike perspective, knowing what's true by sitting outside and looking at the bigger picture. We can recognize lies if we simply look for the contradictions that are inevitably there when people try to distort what is true and replace it with what is not. Which leads me to a great counterexample to start to wrap things up with today that came out over the weekend courtesy of one of the best actual investigative journalists still working out there. He leans left, he doesn't hide it, but he has one thing that your host truly admires, and that's integrity. He does his very best to tell the truth. And in this case, it's the truth that a lot of the left doesn't want you to know, which is what makes his integrity so important. Highly cited Hamilton 68, says the headline, as repeated in Zero Hedge, it's the Russiagate tracker, and, says Taibbi, it's a total hoax, as well as an indirectly state-sponsored propaganda tool. The website claims to monitor a secret list of Twitter accounts, which they accuse of being under Kremlin control. The claims are, of course, impossible to verify, and the group has never disclosed their methodology. But as Matt Taibbi noted via Racket, Hamilton 68 was and is a computerized dashboard designed to be used by reporters and academics, yeah, sure, to measure Russian disinformation. It was the brainchild of former FBI agent and current MSNBC disinformation expert, oh good grief, backed by the German Marshall Fund and the Alliance for Securing Democracy, a so-called bipartisan think tank, whose advisory panel includes all kinds of scumbags like former acting CIA chief Michael Morell, former Russian ambassador Michael McFaul, former Hitler for America chair John Podesta, and one-time Weekly Standard editor, the infamous neocon Bill Kristol. Says Zero Hedge's summary, Taibbi has now torn Hamilton 68's so-called black box asunder after reviewing the latest batch of, what else, Twitter files. And no, you're not going to hear about this from the waste stream either. As Taibbi writes, it's not just frauds like Stephen Glass and Jason Blair that crippled reputation of the New Republic and New York Times, respectively, by slipping years of invented news stories into those bogus pages. But now, thanks to the Twitter files, we can welcome another new member to their infamous club, Hamilton 68. If one goes by volume alone, says Taibbi, this off-sided neoliberal think tank that spawned hundreds of fraudulent headlines and TV news segments may go down as the single greatest case of media fabulism in American history, because virtually every major news, and I have to say it, sick organization in America is implicated, including NBC, CBS, ABC, PBS, CNN, MSNBC, the New York Times, and of course, the WAPO. Even Mother Jones alone did at least 14 stories pegged to the so-called research from the group, and fact-checking sites, yeah sure, like PolitiFact and Snopes, cited Hamilton 68 as sources. Trouble is, even Twitter thought they were full of shit. Taibbi reveals Twitter was concerned enough about the bogus claims of Hamilton 68 that they ordered a forensic analysis that found out of the 644 accounts supposedly outed by them, just 36 were actually registered in Russia, most of those associated with RT, which, let's be clear here, folks, has at least as much journalistic integrity as CNN or the WAPO. And furthermore, he says, Twitter execs were shocked, I tell you, because the accounts Hamilton 68 claimed were linked to Russian influence activities online were not only overwhelmingly in the English language, 86%, but mostly, quote, legitimate people, largely in the U.S., Canada, and Britain. And grasping right off the top that Twitter might end up being implicated in a moral outrage, they wrote that these account holders, quote, need to know they've been unilaterally labeled Russian stooges without evidence or recourse. And the emails from the company go on to cite all kinds of other damning information that even the left knew just how bogus all of this crap was. Quote, these accounts are neither strongly Russian nor strongly bots. Another one says, no evidence to support the statement that the dashboard is a finger on the pulse of Russian information ops. And finally, this is hardly evidence of a massive influence campaign. And even Joel Roth, their trust and safety chief, declared, quote, I think we need to just call this out on the bullshit it is, unquote. And this, writes Taibbi, was not faulty science. It was a scam. Instead of tracking how Russia influenced American attitudes, Hamilton 68 simply collected a handful of mostly real, mostly American accounts, and then claimed that their organic conversations were somehow Russian scheming. As Roth put it, virtually any conclusion drawn from the dashboard will take conversations in conservative circles on Twitter and then accuse them of being, you know it, Russian. And how bad was it? It was so bad, even Twitter execs, before Elon Musk, wanted to out Hamilton 68. The victims of the scam, noted Taibbi, never found out they'd been used as fodder for mountains of disinformation stories about Russia. And he notes that the story demonstrates how the illusion of ongoing Russian interference worked. The magic trick was generated by a confluence of interests, basically all of them anti-American. And now we know that the Russian threat was, in this case at least, just a bunch of ordinary Americans dressed up to look like a red menace. And shame, he concludes, on every news outlet that hasn't renounced these tales. As the X-Files show famously claimed, folks, the truth is out there. No, you certainly can't count on the waste stream to tell you about it, unless you apply the 80-20 rule, and the moral still remains, see that you're not deceived. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.